You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
I'm as baffled by this conflicting evidence as you are. His prints are all over the crime scene. The TV footage puts him 60 miles away.
He can't have been in two places at once. You know me.
I didn't kill that kid, Ralph.
Do you see how strange this is?
What would make someone do such a thing?
He didn't do it.
I have no tolerance for the unexplainable.
Well then, sir, you'll have no tolerance for me.
Answer me this. Do you think Terry Maitland killed that boy?
If he didn't do it, someone else did. Someone else did. Someone else did.
Hello, and welcome back to Castle Rock Critical. I am your host, Emma. Hurrah! And I'm joined this week by that little voice over there in Australia. It's Gaz.
Okay, emphasis on the little again. I'm taller than you, so settle
you
down.
You are. And my voice is I did admit bigger. That in a podcast.
You did. That's all. That's out there now for everyone to hear.
It is. It's forever memorialised in audio. So me and not so little Gaz, if anything, I'm little Emma, are here to continue our coverage of HBO's The Outsider with episode 6, The One with the Yiddish Vampire. Let's talk about that in a bit. But firstly, just to give you guys an idea of what we're going to do in this podcast today, if you are new, which I'm sure you're not at this point in episode 6, we'll be doing our usual structure. So we'll get a general overview of thoughts and feelings about the episode, a deep dive into the plot, and then over to King Corner for book differences. I've given up on Easter eggs, there aren't any. And then we'll round everything up with some lovely listener feedback. Now, Gaz, you've been out for a couple of weeks.
I have, yeah.
So bring us up to speed on how you found the last couple of episodes, what you think of this one, and of course, give us your blueberry score and a brief explanation of that lovely little system that you coined.
All right, thanks. And thank you for the credit for the blueberry system.
John's going to kill me.
No, he won't. He knows. It's fine. You can relax. So the blueberry system is a simple yet complex beast. It is a rating system for all media consumed on a scale of 0 to 5, with 0 being awful and 5 being unbelievable, in a good way. So the last couple of episodes that I've missed out on, I'll briefly touch upon. I didn't love them, and I was sort of first couple of episodes, the first 3 episodes of this show, I thought were brilliant, and I couldn't really understand your lukewarm reviews, Emma.
And I
was thinking that because Lucy had sort of similar views as well, maybe slightly more positive than you, but I thought maybe it's Emma rubbing off on Lucy. You know, that can happen. You can be easily influenced if you're with somebody watching stuff. And I didn't get it. obviously you've got a slightly different perspective. You've read the books, and so you're making judgments based on that as well. But I just thought the first three episodes were brilliant. Then the next two episodes were less brilliant, and I'm not going to blueberry them, but what I will say is it just slowed all the momentum, and it felt a lot of Stephen King stuff where there's a brilliant idea and they kind of got lost as to where to go with it, and so it's turned into this really quite complicated mess of different strands and ideas that are all over the place, and you're trying to connect them and theorize, and it's really hard. It's hard, and that's not always a bad thing, where you have to work to work things out. But they had to give us more clues and stop overcomplicating things, in my opinion.
That's actually a really good point, because you are right. You know, Stephen King as a writer, especially, you know, I've read a lot of Stephen King of the last couple of years. Thanks, Castle Rock Critical. And I love it. But he is very verbose and he is very confusing. The ironic thing is that the book is not confusing at all, actually. Right. It's very easy. There's not easy. I don't want to say simple, like it's written for kids. It's definitely not don't let your children read it. But there are only a handful of characters that you really have to keep up with, whereas in the show, and I think if, like, we've listened to the last couple of episodes, obviously I'm assuming everyone that's listening has, you'll know that there are a lot of characters that have been added into this with a lot of detail that aren't in the book. And I think actually, Gaz, that's a really eloquent way of putting it. It's just become overcomplicated a little bit.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the best mysteries are, in a show like this, the best mystery would be, what is it that's doing this? And they blew their load a little bit by showing you who was doing this from the start. So there isn't really that mystery. That doesn't exist for us anymore. They've decided to give us other mysteries around kind of what the technicalities are, how it functions. Mm. And I just don't find those mysteries as interesting as, who is this? What is this creepy figure that's lurking? Like, that's a more interesting theory to kind of think about. So I didn't love the previous two episodes, and I thought to myself, I'm hopefully coming back into this at a good point where it's going to kick on again. And I'm not sure I did get that, to be honest. This episode, I was having a look, and I think it's been pretty well received, actually, generally speaking. I'm looking forward to hearing what you think. But for me, this episode, episode 6, The Yiddish Vampire, is that like...
It's like a Friends title, the one with the Yiddish vampire.
Yeah. Do you know what it makes me think of? Is that Count Dracula from Sesame Street. Like, I know that he's just sort of Transylvanian, he's like got a Romanian accent or something, but it sounds like he could be Yiddish, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
I want to suck your blood. I don't know. Anyway, there is so much explanation in this episode, and it needed it. Some of this stuff needed explaining, but the way it was just sort of people standing around going, well, if you think about it, then actually, it must be that he wasn't actually here because he hasn't left any imprints on the chair, but there is
some fingerprints on the table. How much does a radio transmission
weigh? Right. I'm like, I don't know or care. What is this? Anyway, lots of explaining, but still like more confusion. And yeah, exactly. How much does a radio transmission weigh? How heavy is a hologram? I don't know. Why is that relevant? Is he also a hologram? Is he?
Of all the people you're asking, it's Jeannie. And I'm not sure that she has a fucking clue, to be honest. Not that she's stupid. Don't think she is at all.
No, but she doesn't have a doctorate in weight science, presumably. Yeah, there we go. That's the one. Give me a second. It's 5:30. All right. And, you know, the way that, like, this Tracy guy in Dayton is involved in those murders, it just feels unnecessarily clogged up. There's the bit with J- Jack getting beaten up with his mum that I just thought was a total misstep, like so out of keeping with the show. And the way that it's like cutting with Glory emptying drawers, that just didn't work at all. I'm sure we'll discuss it later. But I do think that this was the end of a mid-season slump. And I think I can see that there is a clearer vision. And the show is still, generally speaking, really well made and really creepy atmospherically. So I am still going to give this 3 blueberries. Despite being mostly critical.
Well, we are fan critical. So, you know, and 3 bloops isn't bad. It's above average.
Yeah.
And actually, any kind of half-decent TV is a 3 and above. Let's be honest. And, you know, and interesting to hear what you think, having not heard your opinion over the last couple of episodes. Definitely interesting. I quite like this episode. I definitely liked it a lot more than I liked the last two, and I have been a little bit harsh, and I'm sorry to the outsider that I have been, because I had such high hopes for you. But this episode, for me, it felt like it moved quite a bit further on where I felt like we lulled a bit. And I think it's because I've been waiting for quite a while for the kind of detective round the table reveal thing, because that does happen in the book. Save that for King Corner. Better in the book than it is in the show. But it's also getting spookier and a bit more supernatural, which is what I really like about this story. It's an interesting story anyway, but the spookier it gets, the more I enjoyed it. And I think this episode gave us that. I think, there were some clunky things in it, or a couple of niggles that I'd point out. Like, actually, unlike a lot of viewers, I'm quite enjoying Andy and Holly. It is a little bit hard to believe that he can all of a sudden get a lot of information from law enforcement when he's a security guard. And, you know, some of it was just a bit kind of, I suppose, over exposition-y. Like, you don't need to keep explaining things. Move the fucking plot along. I gotta say, though, like, top-notch Cynthia Erivo. She was nailing Holly Gibney this week. And and I loved her. Like, actually, some of the most powerful things that she does that I really enjoy are those silent, staring vacantly and thinking. Well, not vacantly, but like staring and thinking. You can see her mind going. And she's doing nothing with her face, but she's doing everything with it. And I think that, I mean, I haven't read the Bill Hodges trilogy, Mr. Mercedes, and all of those, but I really, really want to, because I want more Holly. And she is the best part of this show for me. And I think she is also the best translation from the book for me. Even though it's not spot on to her, I really like her on screen, and I loved her in the book.
Is she one of the few that's kept her name?
Well, yeah, I mean, everyone. Marcy is now Glory, which is a stupid name. The kids are ridiculous.
That is a stupid name. Glory is a stupid name.
Drives me nuts.
Finish her name up. Gloria. That's okay. You can call her that if you want. Glory. Yeah.
Gloria is a song by Van Morrison that I once saw live when I was a child. Yes.
Well, there you go.
It sounds like I'm a woman in my 60s. I'm not. But my mother was. But no, I mean, like, yeah, the last couple of episodes have been, you're right, it's a mid-season slump. And I'm more used to seeing stuff like that in The Walking Dead than I am in a Stephen King adaptation or an HBO show. But I felt like this was back to more solid ground, and I think better television. And I'm actually going to give it a 4 blueberry.
Well, excellent. I think that's the first time you've over blueberried me in this series, but
You did give episode 1 5, which I think in hindsight is acceptable.
Yeah, I loved it. Got me right in, but there you go.
Well, look, why don't we crack on and talk about the actual plot, everything that happened, and give it our 2 cents. And just before that, we'll dive into a little advert break. Hello. This is the part of the podcast where we hawk our wares to you. Castle Rock Critical is a child podcast of the Fan Critical Podcast Family Parent Channel.
Just, weird emphasis on child.
We're the baby, although if anything, I think the best of all of them because I get to host these. But we do loads of really cool content across the main Fan Critical channel. And if you follow that, you can get access to every single podcast that we do. You can find us on social media. We are at Fan Critical Pod on Twitter, at Fan _ Critical on Instagram, and just Fan Critical on Facebook. And we do loads of other really cool stuff, like I said. What are we doing? Well, in just over 4 weeks, we will be going back for the hosts of Westworld to cover Westworld Season 3. I can't wait to spend another 10 episodes being so utterly confused I question my own existence.
Yeah, but that's okay. You don't have to host that one. So.
No, I don't. I just get to be an idiot, which is what I do well. We have also got a new Patreon-commissioned podcast just being decided upon. And for any of you Elite Blueberries on Patreon who haven't picked your commissioned podcast, then please do let us know and we'll make sure to cover that when we get the time. And we'll also be doing some new Stephen King retrospectives when The Outsider is over. What have we done recently, Gaz?
We've done Star Wars fairly recently.
That divided opinion. So if you haven't,
oh my word, it did. I felt like the earth had split between me and I fell down the middle. Oscars, we did our Oscars predictions, which, oh my God, I tell you what, listening back to that, I was so close to getting Parasite right.
I know, it's heartbreaking, isn't it? A spoiler warning for the Oscars, if you haven't looked at the winners by this point, Parasite did win Best Picture and Best Director.
And Best Foreign Film.
But that's a great podcast. We do that every year. We have a great laugh with it. We really enjoy making our predictions. I always lose. But this year I got more than one right. So in fairness, I think I've improved.
Well done.
In fact, you and I, Gaz, both got three. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah.
And actually, very interesting, this is a nice segue. We also had a competition for our Patreons when the Oscars Predictions podcast, where we asked them to give us their predictions as well, to be in the chance of winning their own commissioned podcast of a film of some variety, either classic or new, ideally new. So our winner of that was Mr. Michael Corsi. Well done, Michael. If you want to get involved in Patreon, you can. I mean, it's not free. It does involve investing in your favourite podcast, Fan Critical. But we'd love it if you could do that and you get loads of really cool stuff with it. So every single Patreon that supports us from our junior Blueberry level upwards gets access to our Cast-Its, where we recast classic films or new films, often to hilarious effect. You also get access to our community Discord channel to chat to each other about TV and film and Emma and Gaz, your two favourite podcasters. And our higher levels give you opportunities to chat with us, commission your own podcast, and even guest on a podcast too, which we've done one of, which was great fun. It was really good. And, you know, commissioning podcasts, brilliant, because we don't have to think about what we have to do now.
Honestly, that helps a lot. And, you know, we need the money. John's just had a kid, so, you know, I've just got married. I want to be able to support my wife. No, she's very self-sufficient, don't worry. But I wouldn't mind being able to support myself. And Len's just got a dog. He's got to pay for bandanas for it and stuff.
Yep. I've got a cat and a house I've got to pay for.
Yep, you do. We all have needs.
We do. So anything that you can give will be much appreciated, and you get stuff back too. It's not like you're just doing it for nothing. And we have actually got some new Patreons to shout out this week. So firstly, and I'm going to apologise in advance if I get this wrong, but I think Ewan supported us this week, who asked
how's it spelled?
Iwan.
Ewan, 100%. He's got a good, solid Welsh name, just like
yeah.
me.
Yeah, I Welcome, reckon so. Ewan. Welcome, Ewan. Thank you for supporting us. Specifically requested a shout-out on The Outsider. Sarah L. also has joined our Patreon gang. She may have also got a shout-out last week. I couldn't remember. And then just this afternoon... have another one. Sod it, why not? Extra bonus value. And then just this afternoon, Holly Robertson has signed up too. So welcome, Holly. Thank you very much.
New second favourite, Holly.
Yep. only second favourite, Holly Gibney being the first one. But thank you guys, and to everyone who's been supporting us for a long time, we do really appreciate it, and it helps us to put together lots more really good content, especially when you tell us what we should be recording on. But for now, I reckon it's time to get back to the plot of The One with the Yiddish Vampire. Right, so episode 6 opens with Holly waiting at a bus station, very American, to head back to meet with the gang and deliver her findings. In the background, we've got a news report about the police standoff from last episode, and they identify this dude as Tracy Powell. Holly sees his face, and immediately she recognises him as the weirdo man she found at Heath's grave. I thought this was a nice opening. We seemed to be like getting some more information, making some steps in the right direction. What about you, Gaz?
What new info did you get from this?
His name?
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, actually, that good wasn't point.
A detail that I was desperate to know. I wasn't like, oh, I must know his name. Unless it was going to be like Christopher Outsider. And I'd be like, ah, hold on.
But, Theodore Outsider. The Outsider.
Oh, that's good. That is good. Then, yeah, I mean, no, that's fine. Nothing wrong with the opening. I didn't feel like, oh, brilliant, loads of new info.
Well, it felt like we were going to kind of deal with it. I mean, that we knew his name, so something would happen afterwards, is kind of what I mean. Like, it'd be, yeah, I mean, we'll talk about how I feel about this whole thing later on, with my opinion changed drastically. So obviously, when she finds out his name, she calls Andy, security guard Andy, and asks him to do some digging into Tracy. He says yes, because, you know.
Love you.
Yeah, that was my next word in my notes, was because love. And then he tries to express to her how much he misses her, to which Holly smiles, but still, like, shuts him down pretty ruthlessly and is like, yeah, I'm getting on the bus, see ya. I don't even think she says goodbye. Yeah, bye, thanks. But, I mean, so one of the things I was going to ask you, and I've kind of mentioned it in my, what I think of this episode thing, what do you think about the developments of the last few episodes with security guard Andy and Holly?
I quite like it. I do. I think it's good for her to have a sort of slightly more mainstream side as well as, you know, the other stuff. And it shows that. It just shows a different side to it, doesn't it? And Andy, he's a little sweetheart.
He's an adorable little dweeb.
He's such a dweeb.
Isn't he? I like him, though. I quite like him.
He's got sort of unprecedented levels of access to information, but, you know, and I sort of, maybe I missed something originally when we first met him, but it felt like him being an investigator was kind of really convenient. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a bit sort of box ticky, wasn't it? But it's helpful for us because, you know, she gets loads of information. So we're on the bus with Holly. She whips out her laptop, starts looking at the pictures that she took of the guy we now know as Tracy at Heath's grave. Or as my notes say, at Heath's grace. Lo and behold, she spots some gross-ass, mouldy neck situation going on. And this is, I suppose, the first time she's seen this. And it's pretty disgusting. Then she gets an email from Andy. And Andy's like, look, I've done some digging with my special old detective friends. Tracy and Heath were cousins. But then we lose bus Wi-Fi, so she can't go back to him. So she goes for a snooze. And bus snoozes are awful, but I can understand. She's been working really hard. She's tired. So she wakes up, she goes to go to the toilet on the bus. Never do that. Never, ever do that. Just wait. She sees a mangy version of Tracy, who's got a slightly mouldy face. He points out the front of the bus to a jackknife lorry in the road. So, of course, Holly gets all like, oh, my God, causes a massive ruckus. The bus screeches along the highway, like down the guardrail, and the guy's like, dude, what the fuck? And there's nothing there.
Are you high? Are you high on my bus?
Are you high on my bus, man? And Holly's like, Holly probably looks high because she just looks so utterly fucking baffled by it.
Yeah.
Now, like, I mean, I thought this was interesting, and it's a good way to like show how the outsider can potentially control people in the subconsciousness, or maybe control what they see. But I did think it was a little bit obvious, bit lazy.
What do you mean?
As in, like, I just thought it was a bit of a lazy kind of, and especially with the rest of the episode, I kind of felt like, did you have to do it that way? Could you not have used some of the stuff that's already happened to just have home? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, chucking in a brand new ability.
Yeah, well, it kind of is, isn't it? It's like going, oh, yeah, no rules here. And we said this, and I don't want to hark back to it, but I'm going to. We said this about Castle Rock season 2. There's got to be rules when it comes to the supernatural. Like, vampires have to have rules. Goo people have to have rules. And the outsider has to have rules. And at the moment, he's like some magical, all-powerful being.
Yeah, right. And he can also fly.
What? I missed that bit.
And breathe fire.
Oh, yeah, no, I remember that. Yeah.
I know what you mean. And yes, I don't think I'd thought about it in that way. I did think about other moments of this episode in that way. But I actually, I didn't think at the time that this was an outsider-influenced vision. I thought that maybe it was a Holly Gibney vision that was... I thought that maybe... So at first, when she like tries to stop the bus driver and he's like, what the heck? They actually cross a road and I thought a truck was going to come across the road.
Around the corner.
I thought it was going to be an actual vision of something to come. And then when that didn't transpire, I was waiting for the whole show for there to be like a jackknifed lorry somewhere, and it didn't come. And then I was like, oh, that wasn't a Holly Gibney inspired vision. It was an outsider trickery
vision.
That's
really interesting. That hadn't occurred to me. See, this is why I like doing this podcast, because I get to listen to other people's opinions. Because I immediately just thought, it's him again, fucking with her.
Yeah. Well, I think you were right.
I was. But I imagine that probably also put you on edge a bit for the rest of her journey, which is quite cool.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So we go back to Dayton. No. Where do they live? That stupid city. Georgia.
Back to Cherokee City in the state of Georgia. Some of the geography in this podcast while I've been away has been appalling, Emma.
Look, I'm sorry, Gareth, but you are the geography teacher. I have a degree in English.
Right.
And even that I struggle with. So I don't even know the counties in the UK, let alone states and cities in the US. This is why you have to be here, so I don't have to ask listeners who can then send me information about things.
I'll tell you there's a little cheat code when it comes to US geography. Look at a map of the US and you'll have all the information you need.
I'll try that next time. Should we try that again? So we head back to Cherokee City in the state of Georgia.
Very good.
There we go.
There you go, you've learnt. That's all right.
I have. I've learnt a lesson. Gold star for me. Ralph is playing around with his wonky face drawings of the man. Or drawings of wonky-faced man. And actually, here's a note. So anyone who is a Patreon or who would like to become one just for this, our drawings are coming up onto Patreon soon for you to judge. I've seen almost all of them and they are absolutely fucking terrible.
What? I'm so proud of mine.
come on, save the surprise. So Ralph clearly isn't looking at our drawings. Maybe Gareth, I don't know. But he can obviously see the similarities between all of them. But he's really reticent to admit that they look similar and this could be something other than everyone having a weird dream. Jeannie, on the other hand, when she sees the picture the kid drew compared to her one, she's pretty distressed by it because they are almost identical. And she's not having any of Ralph saying it's just people having dreams. And so actually one of the things that she does just after this is convinces Ralph to invite Glory and Jeannie to the big detective meeting. Why do you think Ralph refuses to admit what's quite obviously going on or open his mind to the unexplainable?
Because he's just not wired that way, is he?
It's been six episodes.
Yeah, I know. I do find it weird how kind of certain he is that Jeannie was dreaming, because there's so much evidence to suggest otherwise. And, you know, as a detective, you don't ignore evidence, even if it contradicts what you were, what your original theory was, what your hypothesis was. So he should know better.
I also feel a little bit like, and I think it was either last episode or the episode before, where we had the flashbacks to her grief-stricken state after they lost their son. Understandable.
Yeah, last episode, yeah.
Yeah, I also feel a little bit like Ralph's just going, yeah, you're just having a weird moment like before. Come on, it's a dream. Don't worry about it. Like, dismissing her, which I don't like, because that's not the Ralph I know.
No, and I don't think it's the Ralph that's been set up in the show either. But there you go, that's where he's at. He's not having any of it. Not having a bar of it, as they say here.
I've learnt two new things now, Gus. Look at that. Speaking of people I don't particularly like, Jack wakes up to a rather pleasant surprise in the next scene. The blisters on the back of his neck have significantly reduced. So he thanks some unseen entity and then calls Ralph and is like, can I join your gang, please? I want to come to the meeting. How he knows that's happening today, I don't know. But he's desperate to get himself involved.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
We know why.
And this annoys me a bit, like, you know, him getting involved in it. But, you know, we know why. That's fine.
We do indeed. So back at the Maitlands's, Gloria is having a pretty rough time coping with her grief and that of her girls as well. Like, one of the girls wants pancakes for breakfast and she says pancakes are for weekends. And the other girl then turns around, I don't know why I'm laughing, it's just awkward, turns around and says, daddies are for weekends, which is fucking awful because daddy's never coming back. Sorry.
No.
But then don't worry, because everything is all saved by Jeannie turning out with a bag of Derek's old toys, which is very sweet. And she asks Gloria to come to the meeting later, and then she goes, oh, and actually while I'm here, can I I wouldn't normally ask for this, but I've given you some old toys now, so can I traumatize your children by getting the young one to describe the man that she dreamt about at all the different stages so I can draw it, please? And Gloria's like, yeah, it's fine. What? I mean what?
Gloria's angry afterwards, and I can understand why.
Yeah, I can. Although, what I do like about this, I've got, and actually, secondly to Holly, Jeannie is cracking. I'm really enjoying her. I love how into it she's getting. And the fact that, like, she's the one that is probably so open to believing in something unexplainable. And, you know, and we'll talk about her and Holly later on, but her kind of contradiction with Ralph is, I really like it, and I think she's great.
I mean, yes, and within the show, history's going to prove her right, obviously. But in reality, if that was happening, you'd just be like, honestly, Jeannie, this isn't your area of expertise. Can you just stay out of this?
All right, Ralph.
Do you know what I mean? I can. Now that I'm saying that, I'm like, I actually get Ralph's perspective, because. But no, because Ralph isn't like that. Ralph is more than happy for her to be involved in this investigation, which he shouldn't be, really. And, I mean, as I said, we know that she is actually right, and she'll be able to lord that over him. But, like, just for years to come. Oh, yeah, remember that time with the creepy outsider creature? Remember that? Yeah, you do the dishes. But... He's not like, what are you doing? Stop trying to get involved in this. He kind of encourages her involvement and then just ignores her advice. It's a weird dynamic.
It is. Oh, but yeah, I suppose you are right. He's not actively going, oi, Jeannie, butt out. He's just, you know, trying to convince her not to think that everything is all some crazy demon, so to speak. Yeah, I'm interested in the way that she's portrayed and the way that things all develop. And whether we get like a post-credit scene at the end of the season where they're going, oh, your turn to do the dishes. What do you mean, Jeannie? Come on, remember that time? Told you so. So we get a brief interlude where Ralph goes to therapy. He actually tells his therapist that he saw his son. He feels like it's a breakthrough, not him going mad. Quite a short scene. And then we flip back to Holly. Somehow she's not been chucked off the bus after that debacle. Signals back and she gets a call from Andy, who's used some of his old connections to get some super insider information about Tracy Powell. So big news here. Tracy's car had the fingerprints from the two murdered girls that Heath allegedly killed inside it, and he knew those two kids because he dated their older stepsister.
Yeah.
Firstly, that sounded complicated, because it is.
Yes.
Secondly, what? I'm baffled by this.
Okay.
So the guy that committed suicide by cop last episode had a car.
Yeah. Whoa.
Let's go back to basics. That had the fingerprints of two dead girls in it, but someone else killed them, but his fingerprints weren't on it. And the guy that got shot... I'm lost.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm point proven. Glad it wasn't just me. Yeah. I mean, what is... Why do they need to add layers of confusion to this side story that isn't the main event? It's like, surely the Dayton murders are just there to kind of emphasize that the outsiders at work.
I think this might be first time in Stephen King adaptation history where the book explains something in a simpler fashion than the adaptation does.
Right. So this doesn't happen in the book?
No, none of this happens. Or at least not so confusingly. Like, we go back to Heath Hofstetter, but I don't think there's much detail about anything like this. We definitely don't have a Maria who killed the kid. We don't have all of that background. It's really quite simple. It mostly just focuses on Terry. And then a new thing, but let's not talk about that. It goes forward rather than backwards, shall we say.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're right. It's overcomplicated and it's over, like, exposition-y.
Without actually giving you the exposition you need.
Yeah. Without actually going, and what that means is, it's like writing an essay, right? Or like when you work in sales. It's like, what's in it for you?
Tell me what you're going to say. Say it. Tell me what you've said.
Yeah. Explain it to me.
That's the essay structure.
Nice. It's much simpler than when I was a kid. Teenager, young. Right.
And your mum was 60, apparently.
Yeah. Taking me to Van Morrison concerts. And Jules Holland in his blues band once. That was great.
Interesting. Right. Save that for another pod.
Let's leave that confusion behind. So in a rather weird turn of events, Jack picks up Holly for the meeting. Right. Okay. This is very odd. And then he takes her for a coffee. No rush to, you know, find out what the fuck's going on. And says, oh, do you want to just tell me everything that you've learned that you're going to tell everyone else, but before you tell them? And so our clever little Holly says, no. And then she turns the tables on him and is like, actually, you look pretty rough, mate. Are you all right? You look like you're struggling with something. I think she says something weighing on your heart or something like that. And he gets takes a bit of a turn, almost looks like he's been, like, shocked. So to get himself together, he goes into a seriously ropey-looking bathroom. And I'm going to question everyone here. Do you not have lights in loos in this show? Why are they all dark, like there's no lights?
I mean, I think there was like a flickering fluorescent light in there, wasn't there?
Yeah, but it's not like they were in some really grimy diner. It looked all right outside. Anyway, that just upset me. What then upset me even more is that after he sort of rinsed his face and washed his hands, he stands up and behind him on the wall is a really creepy message that I'm not really sure what is painted on there in, saying, stop her. Just stop
some
her.
Some sort of liquid adhesive.
Creepy, right?
Yeah, very creepy. I thought that was well done.
Yeah, it was. And it's that kind of thing, like, if you go into a slightly deserted bathroom or anywhere late at night and there's a mirror, and then you get that like nervous feeling of like, oh god, what's gonna be there when I stand up?
Yes.
Kind of thing. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I've got to say, and this is a bit of an odd thing to say for me, because I don't particularly like the way they're doing Jack, I feel like his storyline is progressing further than anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's quite linear and simple.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Yes, it's slightly more straightforward. He's got infected by this thing. Although, you know, again, like, last episode with him dropping off all the appliances in the woods and...
Oh, you don't like that lamper?
What is that? What is going on there?
I can't explain to you, Gareth, because it doesn't make any sense to me either, if that helps. But finally, we get to the bit that, I mean, not necessarily the scene, but the bit of any good mystery that I love, which is the very Agatha Christie-esque detective reveal. You know, they're all sitting around the proverbial dinner table and Detective Holly is gathering all her minions to finally reveal what's going on, allegedly. So those sitting around in this meeting are Ralph and Jeannie Anderson, Glory Maitland, Jack Hoskins, Howie the lawyer, and Alec the PI, and Eunice Sablo, who is highly underused in this series, I will just say. So Holly goes...
Despite his name being Eunice. do you reckon, like, I can imagine sort of, like, Howard and Alec being like as Ralph walks in, like, hey, Ralphie boy, what's going on? What, you've brought your wife with you? What the fuck? And who's that? Why is she here?
Who's this one?
Fucking hell.
We've got the whiskey out and everything. Now we're going to put it all away. Ladies.
Exactly. Like, they were expecting proper boys' night in. And...
with Holly at the front being like, and so? So Holly goes on through her evidence, right? She talks through the explanations of why everything's linked, all the backstory she's found, blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah. But unfortunately, everything is veering towards El Coco Land, or El Cucho, as he's now apparently called. So we've gone from El Coco to El Cucho.
Yeah, well, you guys were just... butchering it, I reckon.
I don't know. I think I'll blame Len mostly for that. So this makes everyone pretty standoffish and disbelieving. Ralph is looking pretty, you know, I don't know where you're going with this, Gibney. Come on, I thought you were good, but now I'm baffled. Glory is having fucking none of this shit. She goes pretty mental and then she storms out. Now, I understand that she's been waiting all this time for Holly to essentially come back and go, right, and this is why your husband isn't guilty, because here's a logical explanation, not here's the fucking Yiddish vampire. So I get that. She's a grieving widow who also thinks that her husband, now thinks her husband may actually be a child killer, which is not funny. Again, I laugh when I'm awkward. were you surprised by anybody's reactions at this first bit, Gaz?
Only because when Howie was like, oh, come on, Glory, you don't need to listen to this. She was like, no, I want to hear this. I thought, oh, she buy into it. Like, she's on board. And then she, like, exploded in rage. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe not. But that was probably what I was expecting originally. I was surprised at Alec, just because there was no sense that he would believe this, but then he seemingly is open to it.
Well, yeah, because when they leave, he says to Howie, you know, he talks about, like, centuries old tales of monsters among humans, you know, witches, it just being women. You know, is it not at least possible that we can mistake a demon for a human for once? Which... I like Alec in the book, and we don't get enough of him in this show at all, again, like with Eunice. So I was sort of waiting for something like this to happen. Like, he is a little bit more open. But I kind of wish he'd said that in front of everyone else, not just to Howie, because Howie just tells him this stupid joke about a Yiddish vampire and then walks off.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even a funny joke.
I've got to say, I don't get it. I don't get the joke.
I think the joke is that a cross isn't useful in getting rid of a Yiddish vampire because...
Oh, because he's Yiddish.
Because he's Yiddish.
Right.
Yep. But then, like, that's not really funny, is it?
Okay, so what's the message then? It's that you can't... Maybe whatever it is that you're going to try to use to stop this thing isn't going to apply because it's not... It doesn't right play thing. By those rules. Yeah. So you can't arrest... Can't arrest the outsider because he's not arrestable.
Now, I mean, correct, but unnecessary. I'm going to call that not a joke or a very funny tale, and dismiss Howie quite disappointingly from that entire scenario.
You are dismissed.
You are dismissed, Howie. Goodbye. So in the parking lot after the meeting, oh, I've become all American, parking lot. Car park. Eunice tells Ralph that he thinks if Holly is right, then Claude Bolton is the next victim of some variety. Ralph is not really open for being that open-minded, but it does look like Eunice is. And, you know, I mentioned right back when we first talked about El Coco or El Cucho, I'm going to call him El Cucho, that Eunice tells the story in the first place. So, you know, he mentioned that in the meeting. It's like, oh, my grandmother used to say that to me when I was a kid. That was it. Okay, fine. So I'm really looking forward to, hopefully, please HBO, more Eunice after this. Jeannie, however, is happy to stay and listen to Holly. You know, she has said since the first episode that maybe everyone should consider the unexplainable if the explainable doesn't exist. Jack is also there and he's having a pretty awful time. I actually feel a bit sorry for him at this point. Like, he's got stop her getting scratched into the back of his hands like some creepy fucking ghost.
I mean, he is having a terrible time of it. Jesus.
He looks like he's haunted and suffering from the DTs and hungover.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks hungover.
Yeah, badly sweaty.
Badly hungover. Yeah, oh, God.
Ugh. So after that, Jeannie goes to get back in the car, and Ralph has what I like to call a serious, like, foot in mouth episode here, basically saying Holly's bonkers. That explanation was nonsense. Before realizing she's just got in the back of the car because Jeannie's invited her to stay. Which really, like,
Ralph, stop saying that.
Seriously,
stop saying that.
Shut up. Look in the rearview mirror. Do you think it's a good idea for Holly to go and stay with the Andersons?
Well, from whose perspective? Like, for us, as a narrative perspective, it gives Jeannie and Holly the chance to kind of continue their little investigation, which is good. Probably not a good idea from Ralph's perspective to say, yeah, sure, but I think he...
at least he's polite.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he still has his manners. Yeah, I don't know. I'm glad it happens, but I don't know why Ralph would be like, sure, come in, have some tea.
To be honest, at that point, if I was Holly in the back, I'd be like, do you know what? Actually, I'm going to go to a motel, and I'd just get out of the car. I'd be like, he's being a knob. But no, that's not what happened. And for us viewers, it gives us a lot more to work with here. So Holly walks in and immediately walks off into the hallway. And at the time it happens, you're like, what the fuck are you doing? Where are your manners? Just wandering into someone's house. But what she's actually seeing is the timeline of, like, blurry face dudes that Jeannie's hung up. And she makes a pretty astute assumption here that it is the kind of journey of his transformation, and the reason that he waits between killings or taking on people's visage is because he's transforming like some kind of disgusting, murderous butterfly in a chrysalis.
I was going to say, I've got one minor, very, very minor Easter egg here.
Oh, well, all I was going to say is that Holly starts looking at the chair and Ralph's not a happy chappy. So before I ask my other question, tell me your Easter egg.
Well, it is minor, but... How often does Pennywise surface?
Every 27 years.
Correct. How many days between each killing?
Between 24 and 28.
No, 27.
Is it actually 27 days?
24 to 27 days, yeah.
Huh. Nice. I like that. I'm trying to avoid the it's because I've never actually finished the
only
the book.
Thing. Oh, really? It's also the only thing that we've been able to reference.
Now, a question for you. I know you're teaching expertise, law and geography, but I don't know how much you know about science, Gaz. Can you make a homemade black light with an iPhone camera and some drawn-on bits of sticky tape?
I hope so.
Me too.
I was going to say...
I really want to try it.
I hope not, but not because I've got anything to hide. Just... It seems creepy, but yeah, how cool would that be? I'm giving it a go.
I'm definitely giving it a go. I've got some red and blue Sharpies in the office that I reckon if you combine them together might make the same colours that she made.
Well,
don't know what I'm
going to
blacklight.
Purple.
Yeah, blacklight. Yeah. So we'll see. Right. But obviously, Jeannie explains, like, that she's seen the outsider or El Cucho in the house and that he was on the chair. And we have this whole conversation about, and let's not go back to the weight of radio transmissions, but the black light across the table and, you know, all of this. It looks like disgusting. What do you think about the existence of that and the conversations that they have about it?
Why have they had to, I mean, are they just sort of like, nobody's sat on this chair since.
Like, well, to be fair, Jeannie just touched it because she picked it up and moved it.
Anyway, there's that. Then there's this whole business about it being a hologram or not actually being in the house.
Let's not go back onto that
again. I know, but it's just, is it necessary? I'd prefer in a way, like I get that what they're doing is Ralph saying there can't have been a break-in. There's no signs of a break-in. Nobody was in the house. And so like from an evidence-based perspective, it couldn't have been the outsider. It must have been a dream. But I'd prefer it if it was just like he managed to zap himself into the house and zap himself out. Like, I would prefer that rather than it being some sort of hologram. What's the point? It's just unnecessary.
Yeah, and I haven't
muddying the waters further.
I haven't mentioned this in King Corner, but I don't think the conversation about radio transmissions or holograms happens in the book. They do the black light thing, which is good, but it's kind of like basically he's just dripping goo all over the floor while he's in the middle of his transformation, which is disgusting. But I think there's a handprint on the table or something like that, so it's a little bit more tangible than just a load of glowy smudges. And I think what I think is challenging about this is that in this episode, there are about five different ways that the outsider influences or appears to people in dreams or in their head or in like a weird vision or as a radio transmission or fucking who knows what. And I think
writing
you kind
on
of
the walls.
You just need to pick one. Just pick one. You could have done is you could have had Holly's weird dream vision, which is really what I think that was. She was half asleep and he's coming to her in her subconscious. And then make Jeannie's experience with him that it was a dream. I don't know what you can do with Jack, and we'll get onto that in a second. But just get a bit of consistency with it, because otherwise what we're ending up with is a bad guy that we cannot predict in any way whatsoever. So I don't see how they're going to resolve this.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, I'm looking forward to what power he has next.
Yeah. Well, let's move over to Jack, who is having quite possibly the worst time ever. So he gets back to his mangy little flat and his mum turns up back from the grave and beats the fucking living daylights out of him so to make sure we do what he's told. I'm not going to go through these scenes in too much detail because there's just no need.
Can I just say that the first moment when he walks out of the shower and then you hear like, "Hey, Jackie boy," that is terrifying. That's excellent.
Yeah.
That's done so well. But then when we come back to that scene and you just see like comedy actress she's from like Saturday Night Live, the person playing the mum, and she looks the way that she contorts her face and eventually flies through the air is just it's like shit slapstick comedy.
It's like a demented Oompa Loompa.
Yeah.
Because Jack's a big bloke. And I'm sure that there's a horror movie where there are small children or dolls or leprechauns or something that attack people and try to eat them. But all I can think about is gremlins, and that's not what I mean. But that's what it felt like to me. I thought it was fucking hilarious. What I liked even better was when he was being thrown about and dragged about the room without his mother there. So it just looked like he was like throwing himself around and beating himself up, which I know I shouldn't be laughing at it because it's supposed to be serious television, but I thought it was really funny.
Yeah, you laugh at all the good bits, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a psychopath. Mm. It's true.
Yes, evidently. That's why I moved to Australia.
Hey!
But, you know, like, yeah, he can be beaten up without there being anything there. I, I just thought the whole mum thing was totally unnecessary and didn't work for me at all.
Certainly got him to do as he was told.
Well, it did.
I'll tell you what, why don't we move on to happier places, Gaz? To the Gentleman's Club, shall we? The Peach Creeks. This is a very...
There's a cheery place.
Oh, yeah. Yay, the Peach Creeks. Everyone looks so happy on heroin. Not that I'm saying that every exotic dancer is addicted to heroin, because I'm not at all. That's not what I'm saying. Okay. But we get a little scene here, which gives us a little update on Claude. Who appears to still be a little bit hazy and apparently feeling quite violent. So there's a fight and he goes to break it up. And this huge bloke, who quite frankly should have been breaking up the fight by himself, tells him to go and take some air because he's still on probation. So he does. He goes out and and as he drives off, we see that Eunice is there watching him. Which I like.
What do you think he's going to do?
I think he's going to tail him. Is the obvious answer. But I think that this is the show's way of saying Eunice believes that this could be the unbelievable, and what he's doing is trying to find evidence of that in reality to make it more manageable for his nice police brain to be able to deal with, and then to be able to kind of say to everyone else, well, look, actually, Holly's not completely nutso. El Cucho is eating children and turning people into crazies.
Yeah.
Which is a sensible thing to Eunice. Do.
I fear for him, though. I think he's heading into a world of trouble here.
I think he could be.
Mm.
I think it's important that somebody does something sensible here. And actually, the only people who appear to be taking action of any kind that is paying off in some kind of information are Holly and now Eunice. So I'm all for this.
Do you know what I thought might happen when I saw that Eunice was there? I thought that maybe they would try and arrest Claude and then have him locked up and do the morally dodgy thing of waiting for the next murder. And then seeing that there's all this evidence that says it was Claude, and then they'd be like, but we know that Claude was locked up in this jail cell.
That would be sensible, wouldn't it? Well, let's go back to the unsensible place. Let's go back to the Andersons.
Yeah, nice.
Where Holly is being very unsensible by theorising that perhaps it wasn't actually El Cucho, it was a projection or a blah, 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 blah. But then she finally gets on to the point that perhaps it's sort of a mind control theory that he's forcing people like Tracy, and obviously we in the background know Jack, to do his evil bidding while he's transforming. And weirdly, so Ralph then, he's like, I'm not having this, I'm going away. He goes into Derek's room and he gets a call from Glory, like really late at night, asking him to come over, which I thought was bizarre. Mm. So this is, and you mentioned this at the beginning, so one of the things, what's juxtaposed with Jack being beaten up by his tiny crazy mum, dead tiny crazy mum, is Glory kind of going through Terry's drawers, touching his watch, smelling his shirts, and then all of a sudden just dumping everything into the hallway. Clearly, we now know, kind of looking for some kind of evidence that he wasn't the man that she thought she was and that he could have been guilty. And this is what she says to Ralph when he comes over. You know, actually, if we can't find any evidence to the contrary, maybe he was guilty. You know, it's a horrible thing to have to think, but maybe he was, and Ralph is still adamant that he's innocent, even if he can't believe what Holly's saying. you mentioned the Glory scenes in your kind of overall review, Gaz. Did you like them? How did you feel about it?
No, I didn't. I didn't mind this conversation. I think that's quite good. It's quite a natural place for it to go, like for her to show some signs of doubt. When they're, you know, from her perspective, they're inventing monsters to try and explain why he didn't do it. But I just thought I don't get the cuts between Jack being beaten up by his mum and Glory getting rid of all of his clothes. I think it was like,
it didn't make sense, did it? It was the wrong thing to juxtapose.
Yeah, I didn't get what the message there was at all. I don't know whether it's they're both sort of being tormented by people who have died. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, well, I think it would make more sense to cut between Ralph and Glory than it would between Jack and Glory. Because they're more, you know, like Ralph in those scenes last week when he saw his son in his room, or like Jeannie packing up his toys rather than Jack being beaten up by his tiny mad dead mum.
Exactly. So, yeah, you know, it didn't work for me, but whatever, they've decided to do that.
So Ralph comes home and Holly's in the kitchen looking for some tea. They have a bit of a verbal spar. And then Holly says that she's surprised that he hasn't had any visions or dreams, which actually, if you think about it, doesn't really make much sense. You'd think the outsider would go for Ralph first and be like, dude, fuck off, leave it alone, rather than trying to pass him messages through creepy six-year-olds and his wife. And then it's sort of... does he actually say to Holly, I saw my son, but it wasn't him? Or does he say it to himself?
No, he says it, but I wasn't sure, and maybe this was deliberate, when he was saying it wasn't him. Was he saying it wasn't his son, or was he saying it wasn't the outsider?
I don't know. It could be either. I'm still unsure. And I liked that. And I like when Ben Mendelsohn is being quite introverted and not stubborn, he's great. And while he's muttering away, it wasn't him, Holly, she's like, ah, sorry, I'm just going to go and print some pictures of some blisters.
Yeah. You don't mind if I use up your ink, do you? Don't print it in colour.
Yeah, full colour on photo paper as well, just so, you know, you can see all of the details. Just disgusting. So we come to our final scene, Gaz.
Yes.
Well, final set of scenes. So the next day, Jack gets up, puts his makeup on, nicest shirt, and he goes off to pick up Holly to... because he's called her and said, I want to take you to the barn and show you something. If anything, if you knew anything about Jack Hoskins anyway, you would not go to the barn with him. He's not a nice man. And this is where the shit begins to go down. So she's like, oh, don't really want to drive with you. You can get in here, but, you know, bus nearly crashed. Didn't mention it was her. So he gets in the car and...
she left that detail out.
She was like, yeah, just because I had a bit of a crazy nightmare about a guy that's definitely dead. But don't worry about that. I'll drive. What? So I don't know really. I can't remember how the conversation comes about, but she basically goes, you'd look better without the makeup. And then she's feeling in the back seat. She picks out some wet wipes and she tries to get one out, drops it on the floor. And as Jack bends down, all of a sudden it's like, oh, fuck, he's got blisters in the back of his neck. And she knows. She fucking knows something is wrong. So she tries to suggest going back to pick something up from Ralph's. And Jack is having none of that. And that is where the episode ended. And I've got to say, that last scene is what gave it four bloobs for me. Because finally I was like, Holly's got evidence right in front of her that something is really fucking wrong. I was really on edge. I didn't know how badly he was going to react. I didn't know where they were going. Like, loved it. I thought it was a great way to end the episode.
Yeah, I thought, I think the same. It's what's made me really look forward to the next episode, the next few episodes, because, like I said, I think it did hit a bit of a slump for me. But that was a sign that it was heading back out. That was the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, like, Holly's reaction, and again, it's this, Cynthia Erivo, so good. It's that kind of, there isn't much expression, but there is so much in her face. And I just, she's a stunning actress. And that's what really got me excited at the end of this one. Really good.
Yeah.
How badly do you think shit's going to go down in next episode?
I think the thing is, Holly knows that she's in a bit of a pickle here, and I don't think there's actually going to be much point in Jack kind of keeping up the front anymore. I reckon he'll just explain what's going on, and she'll try and help him.
Really?
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I think it'll be like, he's like, he'll be like, I'm sorry, I've got to do this. Like, I've got no choice. And she'll be like, what do you mean? You always have a choice. And then he'll be like, I don't, this thing's got me. I'm so sorry, I've got to do this. And then everybody else Ralph's going to find out about it, and, or that she's gone. Maybe Holly's left a note or something to say where she's gone.
I hope she has. That would be really nice and convenient, wouldn't it?
It really would. Or Andy will call up with some new information, or just to say that he misses her. And she'll be like, quick, help.
I love you. Help me. This is where I am.
Yeah. Yeah, as you know, I think there's going to be... I think it's going to be some drama, some tension for sure.
I think that's quite an interesting way to think about it, because I hadn't considered the fact that Holly might want to try and help Jack. And I suppose that's one of the things I said last week, is that the Jack in the show is more sympathetic a character than he is in the book. So I suppose I can actually see that working with these two. I'd like it if Security Card Andy turned up and saved the day. Like, actually, it turns out he's a stalker and he's put trackers on Holly and he knows her every movement, but that's what saves her life. So they fall in love and go and live in Dayton, Ohio together.
That is a possibility.
Mm, yeah. Well, we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see for next week's episode. Now, I wonder, Gaz, if it might be time to take ourselves over to King Corner. What do you think?
Let's head over there, shall we?
I'm innocent, Red. Just like everybody else here.
The house is burning.
Hi, Georgie.
I'm afraid I have a tendency to turn up the heat.
Red rum! Red rum!
They're all gonna love you! Creepy Terry! Creepy Terry!
Stop! You flop door!
Hello. Me again. You never get rid of me in this podcast. Hello. Hello, Gareth. It's Gareth. Look.
I'm still here.
Here we are in King Corner. It's cosy and lovely, largely because we haven't got a section on Easter eggs, because it's all about Pennywise and it. What we do have, though, is some book differences to talk about. Now, some of these we've mentioned before while we've been talking about the plot itself. Some of them a little bit more detailed. So I think, like... I mentioned this earlier, so Ralph in the book is still quite disbelieving, but he is nowhere near as rude to Holly as he is in this episode,
right,
in my opinion. And I've mentioned this before, that they become very close, and not in a like sexy time way, just in a like really good mates way. I feel a bit like what they're trying to do with the show is they're trying to split the Ralph from the book into Ralph and Security Guard Andy.
Oh.
So we get some telly romance. Not, there's no romantic stuff in the book, but instead of giving Ralph and Holly the really close relationship that they had in the book, they're taking half of that away and giving it to the Andy character.
Yeah, okay. So does Andy not exist at all?
I think she speaks to a security guard, but no, there's right, no okay. there's no security guard Andy with secret police friends.
Yeah, okay.
Not the secret police. We're not in Russia. Is that Russia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Soviet Union.
Thank you. So, yeah, I think that might be what they're trying to do. And I kind of, I get it, and it's fine. But it's just a shame, because I remember the relationship between Ralph and Holly being so good and me enjoying it so much, that I think not having it this far into the season means we're not going to get it.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't have thought so. There's not enough time.
No, four episodes left. God, we've only got four episodes left. The scene that we just talked about with Holly and Jack doesn't happen in the book, but their storylines do converge at some point in a slightly different way. And that's all I will say for now. Okay. So the bit I quite like, the kind of people around the table detective reveal scenario. It's pretty similar in terms of like who's there and that she goes through all her findings. But in the book, Holly actually brings a DVD because she's a massive film buff and she loves movies. Right. Which is great. I mean, she'd be great at the podcast, to be honest. And she shows a few clips from a film with a kind of similar creepy character to El Cucho. And I can't remember. I'll tell you what, if it turns out to be the Yiddish vampire, it'll be hilarious. But basically, this like a couple of scenes of this guy taking on someone else's face and eating children, or putting them in a bag and then eating them later. And she's like, I know it sounds mental, but this is what's happening.
Right, okay.
So which, you know, multimedia.
What is that film? That sounds like a candidate for the worst of Netflix, to be honest.
Yeah, quite possibly. I'll see if I can find out what it is for you. And if not, then I'll find something equally terrible for the worst of Netflix. So we get... One of the things that we do get is the black light trick with the phone. Holly staying with the Andersons, and Jeannie being quite believing of Holly in the book. So all of that is spot on. Brilliant.
Excellent. Well, I think that's good.
Well, yeah. So the things that do work, fantastic. I think the biggest thing here and the thing that's really different is that we've barely developed any further into the plot in the last four episodes compared to where we are in the book. So like the beginning, I said the first two episodes were basically 50% of the novel. And they went very quickly. Mm. The plot moved really fast. Everything was really exciting. And then the last the last four have been quite slow plot movers, which is good and bad. It's not always necessarily a bad thing for a show to move slowly. But for a book reader, comparatively, it is a very different experience to have gone, you know, something that took me, well... It took me about a day to read half the book, but like, yeah, it's a long time to experience.
Show off.
To then reading, to then watching something in the space of 2 hours, it just feels very quick. It's like it's gone too fast.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, like you say, if the a slow paced show, nothing wrong with that. If that's kind of, but I think it has to be quite consistent, like a slow paced sort of detective show or like true crime story. They start off slow paced and it kind of slowly works up to a crescendo for the last couple of episodes or whatever, whereas this went like boom 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 and then it's just gone like boom.
It's almost gone the opposite, hasn't it?
Sounds yeah
it's but like I think we've had all the hard hitters in the first 2 hours and then the last 4 hours have just been sort of plodding along, creating loose ends almost. It's like we're going backwards through a detective novel.
That's actually exactly what's happening, is that the detective work is moving backwards,
which
further away.
Now I said it out loud, is making me wonder about my score. I still believe there's a 5 bloob in here for me. I know you've already had one. I haven't had mine yet, but I still believe it's there. Those are basically all of the differences / comparisons that I could pick up. Something similar happens with Jack, but I can't remember if it's his mum. I can't entirely remember. So listeners, please tell me. I did try to find out, but apparently the internet is not very good at comparing new Stephen King novels to adaptations because they've not been out long enough or the internet's lazy. Who fucking knows? But I'll tell you who does know some stuff. Our listeners and their feedback.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So first up, we've got Brad from Tennessee.
Brad from Tennessee.
Brad from Tennessee. Brad says this. Hello, Fan Critical. Hello.
Hello, Brad from Tennessee.
I was introduced to your podcast via the Minutemen and the Watchmen podcast.
Hey.
Yep, here's one of them there. And really enjoyed it, particularly Len's stellar Jeremy Irons impersonation. And that, I agree with you there, Brad. It was fantastic.
Do you know what? I like, it was good. I went away and I sort of practiced that on my own, and I reckon I nailed it, but I'm never going to bring it because I'll only embarrass myself or it'll be pointless because it's already been done. So just for the record, I believe I'm as good a Jeremy Irons impersonator as Len, but nobody will ever hear it.
I believe that you believe that, Gaz. Don't worry, you'll have your Jeremy Irons moment. It'll be, I don't know who it'll be, but it'll be somewhere else, someone else, in another podcast somewhere. But Brad continues to say, with that being said, Emma and Lucy are very entertaining and I've loved their insight on this show so far. Thank you, Brad. Brad's question is this. Why does it seem like Claude Bolton is sick every time they show him? I assume the outsider is somewhere in the woods transforming into Claude. Agreed. And that the real Claude they're showing at his club, that's the real Claude. But why is he sick? Is that what happens during the month the outsider transforms into its victim? Terry Maitland didn't seem like he was sick with his quips and his pancake cooking. Also, the nurse didn't say Heath was acting weird until he left for his vacation. But of course, we know that that was the monster that she saw. But there was no comment from her on the run-up to his vacation. Anyway, just wanted to get your thoughts on this. Love the podcast. Brad, I agree. It doesn't make any sense. And I said this in the last two episodes. Again, it's consistency. Which is why I'm still unsure whether the outsider is turning into Claude or what. And I assume
I think he must be. They've foreshadowed this enough. But Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I had the same thought. Don't know why he's sick. Maybe it's just a coincidence. Maybe he's got a little bit of flu.
Maybe he's going cold turkey from that heroin that I talked about earlier in the peach quiz.
Oh, yeah, that could be it.
Could be it, yeah. Sweating it out. Or maybe there's just some, maybe because he's a little bit evil and not like his normal do-gooder victims, it's not taking as quickly or as well. Who knows? Another theory.
Maybe.
Don't worry, we've got more feedback because Todd's back.
Hey, Toddy B.
Toddy B. How you doing, Todd? Todd says, hey guys, my thoughts, pros. I really appreciate how, as the show was going into the supernatural, the characters are sceptical and almost laugh it off. The reaction from Glory felt real and quite honestly something I'd probably say and do. Okay. Doesn't believe in the supernatural then, Todd. I've always enjoyed the believer versus skeptic storyline. The best moments in this episode are centred around that dilemma, and I think the show hits this home effectively. Acting is, again, very strong, especially Cynthia Erivo. She brings a very commanding presence to every scene. Agreed.
Commanding, compelling, I think, is our word of choice for Cynthia Erivo.
Certainly is. And I think, actually, Todd makes a good point there, that Glory's reaction did feel very real. And I think as much as I don't always agree with what she says and does, you do feel it. Like, she's very good. Mm. It's very visceral.
Yes.
But Todd also has some cons. His first one is, sucks for El Cucho that all the people who see it are above average drawers. fair point. And as we all said, I know if police asked me to draw a suspect, they would be getting a stick figure. I'm glad you're with us on that one, Todd. The Jack as henchman storyline still feels very used and predictable. It's a classic Stephen King trope, but hopefully they start bringing new elements into that story. Yes. Yes, very good. Todd agrees with me as well from last week. The Terry death was about 40% or so into the book. They've really milked the second half of the book for material. I appreciate a slow burn, but this episode didn't really give us new information. Holly just explained everything she found out the previous episodes to everyone else.
Yep.
Spot on, Todd. Todd's biggest question is this. The monster's next victim was always from out of town to make sure people weren't catching on. If it has attached itself to the strip club guy, Claude Bolton, and that guy commits a murder similar to Terry, won't that just prove Terry's innocence? Very good point. Very good point.
Well, yeah, I mean, at no point has Claude said, oh, God, only 1 week to go before my big trip to Vegas or whatever,
which seems legit for Claude. Maybe he can't leave the county.
Yeah, maybe he can't, but that's the point, is they can't just chuck in a little holiday for him now.
But also that wouldn't work, because we need, like, the outside needs to go somewhere else. You can't kill two people in Cherokee City.
It doesn't work.
Again, where are your rules, guys? But Todd does say, overall, guys, I'm still really enjoying the show and look forward to seeing how all this plays out. With that said, I feel like this is the least eventful episode as far as moving the plot forward. Like I said before, I enjoy a slow burn, but at points it doesn't seem like a burn anymore. It feels like the show needs a jumpstart moment to wake it back up. 3 blueberries for me. Top-notch acting is saving a below-average story pacing. Thanks as always.
Yes, again, yeah. Todd is just, you know, we're just on the same page. But I reckon Todd feels the same. I've got faith that it's going to come through at the end.
I do too.
It's going to work by the end.
I think next episode could be the one where shit really gets real. Like, I think we've had a bit of a cliffhanger at the end of this episode with Holly going off with Jack and us, well, Holly realising that things are not really going in the right direction, and that she shouldn't be in this car with this guy with the mouldy neck. So I think if that doesn't blow up next episode in quite a spectacular way, then there's a problem. And just for future reference for everybody, the next episode is called In the Pines, In the Pines. So I think we might be in a wood of pines.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. Just a thought. I think next episode, I'm going to say it. I think next episode might be my 5 bloob.
Ooh. Although I remember you saying that 3 episodes ago.
Yep. And that was a 3 bloob, so shame. No, I really think, because I I know where this is going, hopefully. I know what this is based on, where it should be going. And I think that we could be in for a real treat. I mean, a nasty treat. Surprise. It'll be good. I think it'll be good.
Okay.
So
I'm excited.
Yeah, we will see how we get on. We will see. But for now, I think that's probably it from us, isn't it, Gaz? Anything else that I've missed or anything you want to add before we say goodbye to the team?
No, just thanks for listening and all that jazz, I suppose.
Yeah, all that jazz, guys. Thank you. No, serious, thank you for tuning in. And again, thank you to all of our new Patreons from this week and everyone who's been supporting us so far. Do follow us on social media where you can catch up with everything that we're doing. It's at FanCriticalPod on Twitter, at Fan_Critical on Instagram, FanCritical on Facebook. Or you can email us with your feedback, any book differences that I've missed or any Easter eggs that are not related to Pennywise or It, please. Unless it's a really good one.
If possible.
If at all possible, you can email us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. We love your listener feedback. We always read it all out on the podcast, and we do like to listen to your thoughts. So thank you for listening today. This has been Emma hosting and Gaz over in Australia. And
thanks, Em.
You're welcome, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
See ya. Bye-bye. Bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.